Hi, I'm Rick Schwartz.
Buenos dias, world. I'm Marco Wendt.
Welcome to Amazing Wildlife, where we explore unique stories of wildlife from around the world and uncover fascinating animal facts. This podcast is a production of iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, an international nonprofit conservation organization which oversees the San Diego Zoo and Safari Park. Marco, I can't believe it, but we have gone all year without diving into the ocean's hub, but this episode is about to change all of that.
That's right, amigo, and I'm really excited to share with our audience some pretty cool facts about the amazing polar bear.
Cool facts. Nice one.
Yeah, I think you're rubbing off on me. Now I'm doing the dad jokes.
Maybe so. I mean, you know, it's not a bad thing, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. You're my inspiration, sir. Aww. But okay. You know, I wanted to say that I think it's very timely that we're talking all about polar bears because this episode comes out in early November, and that is about the same time of the year that the sea ice starts to form in the north, allowing polar bears to hunt and thrive in their Arctic environment.
Oh, so true, so true. And you know, I have known about and talked about polar bear behavior and activity for years, but I still can't imagine living life like they do, roaming across these vast spaces of sea ice in this nonstop freezing conditions. No thanks. I mean, sometimes only being able to rely on the incredibly powerful sense of smell to find your way and then waiting patiently for who knows how long to capture a meal that you might have to jump into freezing water for.
Yeah, no kidding. You know what? Maybe they never heard of Postmates.
Right? Or maybe Postmates just doesn't want to go up there.
Yeah, no kidding. I can imagine that. But, you know, I know exactly what you mean. And all of their cool adaptations, right? I mean, the blubber, the hollow hair, sharp hook claws that give traction on the ice, and there's so much more.
Yes, Marco, there are so many, as you said, really cool adaptations and cool polar bear facts that we can cover. However, I know our listeners who've been with us since season one, well, they know that we had an episode about polar bears already.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And that episode was loaded with facts and information about the polar bear species. And for our listeners that have just joined us for this season, I encourage you to go back to season one and listen to Polar Bears, Rulers of the Arctic.
Oh, yeah. But hold on one second, Rick. If we covered all the polar bear species facts last season, I mean, what are we going to talk about now?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, Marco, because I have lined someone up for us to talk to today that has been with the San Diego Zoo polar bears for a very long time.
Ooh, I think I know where we're going with this one.
Right? So because we were able to discuss so many things about the species last season, I thought it would be fun for us to use this episode to get to know our polar bears at the San Diego Zoo, the very polar bears our listeners can meet if they come visit the zoo.
I love it. I'm super pumped. Okay, Rick, I'm ready. Let's go.
I am Kelly Murphy. I am lead wildlife care specialist for the Mesa and Polar area.
Kelly, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us and share some of your polar bear knowledge with everyone listening.
Yes, thank you very much, Kelly. Obviously, the three of us know the polar bears here at the San Diego Zoo, but can you do a little introduction of the polar bears for our audience?
Currently, we have three different polar bears here at San Diego Zoo. That would be Kaluk, Takik, and Chinook. Kaluk and Takik are brother-sister. They got their names from Inuit, Kaluk meaning thunder because he went boom when he was a kid, and Takik meaning moon because she just had a very full, pretty face. Aww. That kind of looked like looking up into the moon.
Nice.
Chinook is what means wind in Inuit, and she is an unrelated female.
So with the three of them, knowing that Kaluk and Takik are brother-sister, and Chinook is an unrelated female, can you share with us a little bit about their backstory? How did they come to the San Diego Zoo?
It's a unique story for all three of our bears in the fact that they were all orphaned as cubs. So a little background for that is that a polar bear cub stays with mom for about 2 to 3 years of age. And the mortality for a polar bear cub, sadly, is about 50% within that first year of life. So in the case of Chinook, she was known to visit the town of Churchill. I'm sure people have probably heard of the town of Churchill, and even so may have even heard of the Churchill dump site that can have bears congregate there while they're waiting for the sea ice to form. Well, Chinook and her mom were kind of frequent flyers, if you will. They were known to be seen there. And unfortunately, one day they noticed Mom was not in the picture. Now, Chinook was only about a year of age at that time, and so they weren't feeling really confident that she would have survived if action hadn't been taken. So they did go ahead and make the decision to bring Chinook into a zoo setting and find a nice home for her.
Oh, it's unfortunate that she lost her mother, but glad to hear that she was able to find her forever home here at the San Diego Zoo.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Marco. And Kelly, what about the brother and sister duo, Kaluk and Takik? How did they find their way to the San Diego Zoo?
Kaluk and Takik, very similar. They actually came from the Alaska area. Their mom was a female that had a radio collar on. And researchers had known that she had been in a den and recently given birth. And unfortunately, mom died. And knowing that, they knew that there were probably two very vulnerable cubs out there as they were only about 3 months of age, just newly emerged from the den. Fortunately, they had remembered seeing some tracks earlier in their day when they had been doing flights in the helicopter and were able to go back and track them. And same situation, found Kaluk and Takik, fortunately, and brought them into the zoo.
Wow, Chinook's story and Kaluk and Takik's story is a big reminder to all of us how challenging and unforgiving the wilds of the Arctic can be.
Oh, so true, Marco, so true. And how fortunate, though, for them and honestly for all of us that they were rescued. I appreciate you sharing their backstories with us, Kelly, and all about how they found their way here to the San Diego Zoo. How old are the bears now and how long have they been at the San Diego Zoo?
All three of our bears have pretty much been with us here at the San Diego Zoo since they were brought into a zoo situation. We're the first zoo that they came to. For Chinook, she was just over a year of age, and she was already eating solid food at the time, so that was an easier transition, I would say. Kaluk and Takik were definitely a unique situation. I believe they were 12 and 16 pounds collectively when they came to us, and still only getting formula because they had just come out of the den. So we had to utilize our resources to come up with a fat-rich formula for them and wean them onto solid food from that.
And how old are the bears now?
So Kaluk and Takik are 23, and Chinook is a whopping 28.
Whoa, a whopping 28? That sounds pretty old for a bear. I mean, what's the average life expectancy for a polar bear in the wild versus living in the zoo?
For a polar bear in the wild, you're probably looking at late teens, maybe early to mid-20s, with a few lasting longer than that. In the zoo setting, they obviously can live past that just because they've got a great healthcare plan and a food meal plan. And we've had bears live well into their 30s with the longest, I believe, recorded at 42.
Whoa, that's impressive. I guess that says a lot about the level of care they receive here at the zoo, huh?
I was thinking the same thing, Rick. I mean, I got to admit, I didn't even know polar bears could live that long. And that brings me to another thought, Kelly. There's a lot that the average person may not know about polar bears. So I'm curious to hear from you. What are some of the more, say, popular myths or misconceptions about polar bears that you often hear?
I would have to say probably the biggest thing that I hear that's not true is what a polar bear's diet is. And I can understand with our regulars here at San Diego Zoo why you might feel conflicted when you see what we feed our polar bears, but they are not true fishing polar bears. That is not their main diet. Seal is what they would need to feed on in the wild for that fat source. Now, polar bears are great swimmers. Don't get me wrong. They look very graceful, sometimes not so graceful, playing in the pool and swimming. But they're not really built for chasing down fish, at least not in the open oceans, I should say. As I mentioned, some of our regulars have probably seen our polar bears engage in a live fish feeding, which they do enjoy, but they are still contained within our pool. It's not right. Quite the same as the ocean. So these bears, why they're considered an ocean animal or a marine mammal is because they rely on the ice to form. They use that as a hunting platform, not because they go swimming after something.
Well, and like you said, they rely strictly on seal for food in the wild, correct?
Correct. Ring seal is probably their most common, and it has to do, again, with that fat source. So when they actually are successful and they make a kill, they'll usually eat the blubber first thing and often will leave parts of the seal uneaten because it's just trying to be that quick conversion of fat to fat, basically.
Yeah.
And that brings up a really good point, too. They've evolved to specialize in hunting on the ice to hunt the seals that you mentioned. So when there are climate issues and the sea ice is slow to form or maybe even melts early, polar bears can't just go hunt down a deer or an elk. They can't just start acting like a brown bear when there isn't any sea ice, right?
Correct. They are technically descendants of brown bears way back when, but it's been something like 130,000 years that they've been evolving to this climate. And it is a very unique and unforgiving climate at that sometimes. So it is important and crucial because that food source is not available year round. So not only with the living conditions, not only with the availability or lack of availability with food source, as well as breeding and reproduction, it's really, really important that they get that seal as their primary diet. And if they don't get the bulk or the fat stores that they need, what you end up having is some bears that die of starvation, honestly. Or what more is commonly happening now is you're having females that aren't producing offspring as much as they would or as many, or offspring that's not surviving, as I go back to that 50% mortality rate.
All right, Kelly, I'm going to ask a question that I am sure a lot of people are wondering. Knowing that polar bears in the wild must have sea ice, seals, and fat or blubber from the seals to survive, but then we jump all the way here to Southern California, how is it that polar bears can live here in San Diego? How have these bears thrived so well for so long at the San Diego Zoo?
So as you mentioned, sunny San Diego, right? We talk about how important it is for these bears to have fat in their diet and how they have to live out on the sea ice. And so, as you mentioned, people have a hard time understanding, well, if they can live in sunny San Diego, why is it a problem for them to live up in the high Arctic? It goes back exactly what you said, to those fat stores. So our bears here get a more protein fat ratio diet versus a only fat diet. It is fed in a variety of types of food, anything from meat to whole prey to, we do give them fish, as I mentioned, the live fish. So they do get protein, but we don't give them as much fat. Now, I want to say that fat is still an important component because we talked about how they evolved to need that fat, and that is important for their health. So we don't want to eliminate all the fat from their diet, but it's not important for them to gain 4 inches of blubber layer, which is what the bears in the wild would do. So if these bears had 4 inches of blubber on them, being in sunny San Diego, that would probably be more problematic than a benefit for them.
I mean, that makes sense, since the blubber is kind of like a heavy winter coat, keeping the bears insulated from the cold. And like you said, Kelly, that would not be desirable here in San Diego. And I also know that a lot of our guests who do come to the San Diego Zoo might see the polar bears munching on a head of lettuce or even chewing down some carrots. Why do we offer up lettuce or carrots for them?
It's something that all three of our bears really, really enjoy, the romaine lettuce heads in particular. It's kind of funny that they have that preference. But for sure, the romaine, and yes, carrots and yam are another produce that we give. And it's kind of the same premise as your salad. It's something they enjoy, and it helps kind of give them that bulk full feeling. So at the time of year, when their metabolism is telling them, oh, I should be eating more, I should be getting my fat stores ready and prepared, we don't necessarily give them the fat foods, but we can give them the salad foods, if you will, to fill them up but not give so many calories.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kelly, but I'm pretty sure I have seen video footage of polar bears in the wild waiting for the sea ice to form. And sometimes they'll snack on vegetation to help fill the gut and curb their hunger while they're waiting for the opportunity to go out and get a seal. But that vegetation doesn't really give them a lot of calories.
That is definitely true. They'll also be opportunistic, where if there was a beached whale kill or a carcass or something, they'll definitely take full advantage of that as well. But they have been known to eat seaweed. We see them chewing on seaweed out there.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to think of all that we've learned about polar bear diets and eating behaviors from observing the polar bears in the wild. And I also know that our wonderful polar bears here in the San Diego Zoo have helped us find ways to research polar bears in the wild more effectively. Can you share with us some of the many ways Chinook, Kaluk, and Takik have helped us better understand polar bears?
Yes, I like to say that all three of our bears act as ambassadors for their wild counterparts. And all three have participated in a variety, as you mentioned, of research projects. So we've had anything from, well, I'll start with the treadmill study, especially since we just got done talking about diet. They actually did a treadmill study where they had a barometric chamber that was basically enclosed. Takik was the star for that one. And she was basically trained to participate in periods of rest and periods of a treadmill where they measured input and output of oxygen and how many miles she walked or how the duration of time was. And that was all trying to figure out the energy needs of polar bears. So going back to that Arctic environment that we keep talking about, for bears their size that are having to exert more energy, if you will, for longer periods of time in search for food, what impact does that have on them and their ability to hunt or ability to reproduce? So that was a really important one. We just finished not too long ago the Burr on Fur study that all three of our polar bears participated in. I may have mentioned earlier about a radio collar on a polar bear. So a radio collar on a polar bear is one of the more common ways that researchers will use to track particular individuals. The problem is it's limited because you can only radio collar a female polar bear and an adult one at that. If you were to look at a polar bear's body structure, the males are so impressive with their neck muscles and shoulder muscles, and then their face and head kind of taper off. The radio collar kind of slides right off. It sounds silly to say, but it has to do with the contour of their muscles around their neck. For a juvenile polar bear or a young polar bear, they're growing too quickly. So you can't radio collar a youngster because that would be problematic, which only leaves adult females. So a prototype was developed of a new way to try to track polar bears. And the best way I can explain it is it was kind of like a mesh disc, if you will, like a material disc that had a transmitter attached to it. And the whole thing was maybe about 4 inches wide, so not very big at all. And it basically was threaded onto the polar bear's fur around the back of the neck shoulder area. And because it was threaded on the fur, when they did their natural molt, it would fall off and it would be, you know, no harm, no foul, if you will. Wasn't very invasive. And again, you could then use it on any age and sex of polar bear.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating.
Oh, man. I wish I came up with that idea.
And if I remember correctly, the name Burr on the Fur came from someone wanting to mimic the seed burrs that we sometimes get stuck in our socks or our pant legs when we go hiking. And basically capitalizing on the idea that something could naturally grab onto the fur without needing any adhesives.
Yeah, right. And how cool is it that it doesn't hinder natural behaviors and eventually comes off naturally when they shed? Oh, by the way, how did that test go here at the San Diego Zoo?
I would say that the prototype did not stay on for too long. I think Chinooks lasted the longest, and I want to say it was like less than a week, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I guess with it not lasting as long as planned, it's still kind of a great opportunity for the developers to learn and refine the tracker thanks to our bears. And hopefully someday when those new trackers are deployed out in the wild, the researchers can be confident knowing that they've already been tested thanks to Chinook, Kaluk, and Takik.
Yes, it's been very helpful to have the relationship that we do with our animals in our zoo to gather this critical information and share it with not only other zoos, but also researchers in the wild with research that they're collecting.
Ah, that's so cool. I love that after being orphaned and now living here, our polar bears are still a big part of conservation for their species.
Oh, 100%, Rick. And I know we have a lot of young listeners and even adult listeners who want to help out with polar bears in the wild. Kelly, what advice would you offer anyone who would like to do their part for polar bears?
So the biggest thing for polar bears, which, you know, is the same problem that most of our species are facing, is the threat of climate change. And it is causing problems for food for them, as I mentioned, poor reproduction rates, and even things like industry happening more out in those oceans, because now that the sea ice is more fragmented and separated, it's giving more ocean space, if you will, for companies to come in and produce oil or trading or whatever it may be. So when we talk about the little things that you can do, like managing your thermostat at home and turning off your lights and carpooling or biking, those are all the different things, and they really do help. If everybody does a little bit of something, you are going to cut down on your carbon emissions, and all that will ultimately help that climate change.
Oh, it's so true. I really appreciate you bringing that up. I mean, I know some people might feel that they aren't having an impact because they can't see the immediate result of conserving energy and lowering their carbon footprint. But like you said, if everyone does even a little bit, all of us together will make a big impact for polar bears and countless other species.
Exactly. And here's a fun thing we like to do at my house, knowing that a lot of our energy use contributes to climate change issues. But like you said, Marco, it's kind of hard to see the results of our efforts of conserving that energy. We see what we can do to lower our bills each month, because being mindful of our energy use helps polar bears. And get this, it helps our wallet too.
Oh, yeah, right. That's an awesome idea. Kind of makes a household challenge out of it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Kelly, I know we need to wrap this up soon, but I have one more question for you that I love to ask, because each time we ask it, the answer is always as unique as the person we ask it to. A lot of our work is passion-based, as you know. Can you share with us what it means to you? What does it mean for you to get up every day and be a part of the lives of these three polar bears?
I've been really fortunate with our polar bears specifically in that I started working with them almost from the time that they came. Chinook was only a few years old at the time that I started working with her, but I was here when Kaluk and Takhik came. They were 12 and 16 pounds of mad fury, and I happened, ironically, to be pregnant with my first child at the time. So it was kind of entertaining to help hand-rear these helpless polar bear cubs, for all intents and purposes, while I myself was expecting my first child. And it was just kind of a weird symbiotic thing for me going through that. And it feels good to know that we helped save lives. Right. I mean, we really did. There's no way they would have survived otherwise. And it's just a good feeling to now have spent 23 years with them and to see how they've grown, their personalities develop, and they're always going to be my babies. I call them my babies all the time, even though they're 23 and 28. They're always going to be my babies.
Oh, and I imagine they call you Mama Bear.
Oh, Mama Bear Kelly. I love it. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us today on Amazing Wildlife.
Yes, Kelly, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk all things polar bear.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate talking about our polar bears.
Such a great conversation about polar bears.
Oh, I completely agree. And I really love hearing how much Kelly loves Chinook, Kaluk, and Takhik. Even before she said how much they mean to her and the whole calling them her babies, you could hear it in her voice as she talked about them.
Oh, no, totally. I mean, the fact that she has known all three of them since they were so young and to be able to watch them grow over the years, that's just awesome. And the fact that Kelly has been able to be part of polar bears helping with polar bear conservation and research over the years, amazing.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, I appreciate that Kelly brought up the need for us all to be thoughtful in our use of energy and even how our daily activities here in the U.S. can have an impact on wildlife elsewhere, like the polar bears in the Arctic.
All right. And I know that can be hard for a lot of us to remember sometimes because, I mean, like we said earlier, right, greenhouse gases, they can't be seen. And we can't easily see an immediate positive result in the Arctic from using less energy where we live.
That's a good point, Marco. And I have to say, in my years of speaking to the public about wildlife conservation and climate issues, I've also heard a lot of people question how making a few little changes in their life can actually have an impact or make a difference for polar bears.
That makes sense. I mean, after all, if I just adjust my thermostat so I use less energy to, say, heat or cool my home, or maybe use cold water to do laundry instead of hot, it's just me changing a few things, just, you know, a little bit.
That's true, right? So it's kind of hard to see that impact. But what if I did it too, and my neighbors and your neighbors did it too? Or what if, let's say, all the people of the city of San Diego did this also?
Well, you know, last time I checked, we're about 1.3 million people here in San Diego. So, I mean, that's a lot of little actions.
Exactly, right? It adds up. Now let's take it from something we can't really see, like carbon emissions or other greenhouse gases. And just for an example, use something we can see, like litter or trash, for example. So if each person in San Diego picked up one piece of trash in one day, that would be over 1.3 million or 1,300,000 pieces of trash picked up. That's a lot.
Whew, that's a great example, Rick. And, you know, to take it even a step further, I just looked it up. And the most recent data says that there's over 123 million households here in the United States alone.
Wow.
Right? It's incredible. And if every household just made a little change in their energy use every day, that would make a really big impact for everybody.
Wow, that really does put it into perspective, Marco. And I hope this encourages each of you that are listening to see that little changes you make where you live, work, or go to school can make a difference. Then share what you're doing with others so maybe you can inspire them to make changes too.
Yeah, and I gotta admit, Rick, all of this talk about the polar bears and making a difference for them and their Arctic habitat, it's got me thinking about the Antarctic, right? And some of our, let's say, cold weather friends that live in the southern hemisphere.
Oh, sounds like the bird guy is thinking about the tuxedo-wearing aquatic birds of the ocean hub.
Maybe.
Well, then, I think we know what we're going to dive into next. So be sure to subscribe and tune into our next episode in which Marco and I find out more about the dapper, fine-feathered friends of the southern hemisphere, the penguin.
I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. Thanks for listening. For more information about the San Diego Zoo and San Diego Zoo Safari Park, go to sdzwa.org. Amazing Wildlife is a production of iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios. Our supervising producer is Nakia Swinton, and our sound designer and editor is Sierra Spreen. For more shows from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.